And I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the South Dixie Group. I haven't found a necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. And I was told, I don't know. I had all sorts of plans today. You know, we were supposed to be in two different courts, and you know, man plans and God laughs, and one something happened to one court, and something happened. I don't know. Whatever happened, it all got discombobulated, and everything didn't turn out the way it's supposed to turn out. It turned out the way it was supposed to turn out, but not the way I anticipated. It all turned out well, and so one of the things I did was I sort of tried to figure out what I'm supposed to be doing here today. I know y'all are still trying to figure that out, and so I was trying to figure out what step I'm supposed to be on. Not that I'm necessarily going to talk about it, but I was trying to figure out. I do try to make a, you know, mention of it, so I was trying to figure it out, and I figured, and I looked at my calendar, and I figured, well, I'm on the 12th step. I'm on the 12th step. I am on the 12th. I'm on the 12th step.
11.
But
11.
And as I'm walking through the door,
11,
I mean, I counted them, you know, and I walked through the door. Daniel said, I said, well, I'm on the 12th step. He says, no, you're on step 11.
Yeah.
So then I had this great conflict, you know. I was going to talk about the 12th step, and then he said, I'm on the 11th step. And I said, and I was a little conflicted as to what to do until I realized that I wasn't going to talk about either of those steps anyway, you know what I mean? So I was just going to talk about what I was going to talk about, and so I'll just stick with the plan, you know? I'll stick with the plan! What the heck, we'll see how that works out, okay? So, but I actually have a few things planned. I want to talk for a second about old-timers. Old-timers, people that carried the message to me. There's this great story that I heard actually in a Bible study. I was in a Bible study. This is an amazing thing about stories. You know, it says our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. And there's something incredible about stories. And the longer I'm in AA, the longer I realize that the story, that the one thing that's unique in all of us is we all have unique stories. They're all about the same thing. They're all about alcoholism. They're all about miracles, the miracles of our lives, and overcoming drinking, but they're different because they're all personal to us. They're all our stories, and how incredibly how incredible the stories are. You know, when I was about 9 or 10 years sober, in an effort to try to get closer to God, I started going to Bible study. You know, which is I started getting involved in that kind of stuff. You know, I'm a Jewish kid from New York. I started getting involved in that deal. And there's a whole story behind that, and I'm not saying you got to be involved in that deal, but you know, the book does say we lose all prejudice, which, by the way, means the book says a lot of extreme things like thoroughly, utterly. You know, they use those big words. You know, your result is nil until you let go absolutely. Half measures of LS, nothing. You know, and you know, we believe in the big book; it's right. But you know, in our minds, we think, well, that's kind of bullshit. Half measures of LS, 50%. You know, but the longer you go along in AA, what you realize is they mean what they said because they discovered that half measures avail people nothing. That they either wound up drinking again at 20 years, or they wound up at 20 years and they were miserable. They weren't happy with their sobriety. So they realized that the truth is you can get away with half measures and you can settle for a long period of time, but at 25 years sober, even if you don't drink, you just wind up a whole lot of issues and craziness, you know what I mean? And being alone, you know? And so it really did avail you nothing, you know? And that kind of thing. So what happened is the longer I'm sober, the longer I realize is that even though the big book seems sort of extreme, you know, in the way they couch things, all or nothing kind of deal, God either is or he isn't, what's your decision going to be? The truth is, it's the truth. And so this is constant surrender. It's not only surrender of the alcohol when you first come in, but it's constant surrender more and more and more and more. And we all do the same program. You know, I know what program you're doing. We all do the same thing. We do what we're told to do and everything in the big book and everything in the steps, except the shit we don't want to do. So then, and the crap you don't want to do is the stuff that's killing you. The crap that you rationalize as an alcoholic because of your sick mind. Unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, sobriety will be precarious and true happiness will find it at all. And one of the consequences of an alcoholic is you're always negotiating. You're always negotiating the program, you know, and say, well, I'll do this, but I won't do that. I'm going to go this. And you work your program. We got all sorts of different ways of negotiating. We have different code words, like you do your program and I'll do my program, which is a way of saying, get off my back. I'm going to do what I want to do, you know, and all that sort of stuff. But But that's the deal. So the longer I'm sober, the more I realize that, you know, that the big book is essentially right and how it puts things. And the stories are incredibly important. And, you know, when I got into the, and it's, so it says, we lose all prejudice, even against organized religion. We lose prejudice, even against, what it means, we begin to see where religious people are right. Which means we begin to see where religious people are right. We lose all prejudice. It encourages church membership. Did you know the big book encouraged church membership? It's very quick to say, well, you don't have to, you know what I mean? Because you got to understand, A, the, 4 years after everybody got sober and they tried to map things out, you know, it used to say the only requirement for membership was an honest desire to stay sober. Did you know that?
Yeah.
And did you know they changed it? They took out the word honest? Yeah. Ain't nothing wrong with the word honest except it pissed alcoholics off. You know what I mean? So they just sort of weakened it a little bit just to allow you to get in, you know what I mean? And that kind of stuff, you know? And so they sort of like, we're all a little codependent. We're all a little worried about, yeah, but don't scare off the new guy. What if he doesn't like us kind of shit, you know? But the first 4 years, they weren't like that. The first 4 years, in order to go to a meeting, if you're Dr. Bob McGill Thomas, you got to get on your knees. You got to get on your knees. And in front of a group of people, you had to give your life to God. Did you all know that? You read Dr. Bob McGill? I mean, I'm not, you're entitled to your own, your opinions. You're just not entitled to your own facts. Now, you had to get on your knees in front of a group of alcoholics and give your life to God. Did you know that in order to go to a meeting?
I didn't know.
You didn't know that?
Mm-hmm.
How long have you been in AA? You should be ashamed of yourself, okay? So the bottom line is, well, you didn't know that because you didn't want to know it. So here's the bottom line. If you read Dr. Bob, the good old time, it says AA started in 1935. Listen, now you have no excuse because now you know it. AA started in 1935. The big book was written in 1939. They stayed sober for 4 years. They were rocking in the fourth dimension of existence. They experienced much of heaven. The great fact was this and nothing else, you know, that God became the center of peace of their lives. They were absolutely certain that he lived in their hearts and minds in a way which is indeed miraculous. You know, he was doing for them what they can't do for themselves. It was a whole big God program and everything for 4 years. The only thing they used was the Holy Bible. The books they found absolutely essential. That's their words, absolutely essential. That's like essential, but not only essential, like absolutely essential. Well, 1 Corinthians 13, Sermon on the Mount, and the book of James. And after 4 years, they wrote a book, and they said, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. That means do what we did, and you'll get what we got. And ain't nobody doing what they did, except maybe a few people. There may be a few people that are doing what they did. The people who are interested in learning what they did. But they weren't reading the big book, I can tell you that. I'm not putting down the big book. I'm in a big book aficionado, as you say. I quote a lot from the big book, but I understand the chronology and what was going on. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly. So they use words like thoroughly and stuff like that to describe what our deal is in here. And so somewhere along the line, what happens is you're in a great transit. After the initial excitement and wonderfulness of all of a sudden thinking that you're 31 years old and you're going to die, you know, after that wears off, you know what I mean? And you're so excited because you're finally, you know, you've always known you've been crazy, but you've always had that whole old idea, the old idea that nobody could possibly understand you because nobody is so as unique as you and as crazy as you. And so you're alone. And you don't even understand why you're so crazy, why you're so fucked up. You know what I mean? You just don't understand it, you know? And I use the word fuck, and I'll tell you why I use it. Because that's how I think. That's alcohol thing. I didn't say, why am I? I'm saying, why am I so fucked up? You know what I mean? So sick. And then somehow you wind up in Alcoholics Anonymous, and for a day or two or three or five, you don't drink. And it's like a freaking miracle because you've tried and you can't do it. And not only that is you're screwed up, but all you do is hang out with people that are exactly like you. And so, let me tell you something. Better to be fucked up in a group than fucked up alone. Let me just tell you. There's something about being screwed up and crazy in a group of people that are screwed up like you that helps you make it through the day without drinking. You know what I mean? You know, you may not be smart, may not understand steps, but just going to a meeting and say, I'm crazy and I want to kill myself, but they're as nuts as I am. That keeps you coming back for more, you know? But after the initial wonderfulness wears off, and the excitement, it may be, I don't know whether it's 3 months or 6 months or 9 months or 12 months or 2 years, You get into that thing where you're going to the meetings and you're still happy about going to meetings. You may be grateful at times. Every once in a while, you might even experience a little bit of a promise or something here or there. You start dealing with life on life's terms. The meetings become just another meeting, and you realize that you're dealing with the fact that you're crazy. You're dealing with the vagaries of life. You're dealing with the family that doesn't understand. You're dealing with the boss that doesn't understand. You're dealing with the money that you don't have. You're dealing with the mistakes you made. You're dealing with the worrying about with 50% of the time worrying about what other people are thinking about you or going to think about you, and the other 50% of the time telling yourself you don't give a shit about what they think about you. And you're dealing with all the million thoughts of fear and anguish, and you're worried about your health, you're worried about this, you're worried about why you're alone, you're worried about your husband leaving you, your wife's leaving you, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, you're not having sex in a week, or whatever the fuck it is. You're worried about everything. It's just a life of worry. You ain't drinking. And for an hour a day, maybe you go to a meeting, and for a second, you forget about the bullshit. And you get in your car, and you drive home, and you watch TV, you do this, you do that, whatever you do, and the worry comes back, and the anxiety comes back, and the thinking comes back. And you just say, and sometimes you, and the self-condemnation, the standing in the shower saying, oh, you know, I'm such a piece of crap, I want to kill myself, I'll never be okay. And the discouragement comes back, and all the stuff that we worry about, and you know, after we're here for a while, we realize that it's this stuff that is the alcoholism that are crazy. Because you listen to other people and you realize, man, what the stuff I'm having is they're having this is it. And you start understanding that when it says alcohol consumption is but a symptom of our, it's a symptom. I came in here because of a symptom of the real problem. I thought the problem was going to go away once the alcohol went away, only to discover that the only thing the alcohol went away did was it made the real alcoholism become apparent, because I used alcohol to stop the alcoholism, you know, because it worked better to do that. But once I stopped using it, then I had the alcoholism full force about feelings and emotions and all that sort of crap. And you know, maybe you stop calling it crazy. And then you stop, maybe 10 or 15 years down the road, you actually start understanding the second step. Came to believe that a power greater than yourself could restore you to sanity. And maybe for the first time, instead of thinking about the God issue, you start thinking about what do they mean by sanity. And all of a sudden, you start realizing at 7 years sober, well, you can't be restored to sanity unless you're insane in the first place. And you start thinking that this craziness that's going inside of you, this stuff that you're saying, when am I going to be okay? And why is everything so fucked up? Why am I always feeling this? What is always happening? You start realizing this is alcoholism. This is the alcoholism. And like every alcoholic that has ever been alive, you sometimes get a little bit better. You feel a little bit better. You get too well too fast. And all of a sudden, the part, and you get to that point where you start coasting, and you read that thing, they know what's going to happen, because in the big book it says, what does it say? It says it's easy to rest on our laurels, but we're headed for trouble. We do, and we rest. We stop drinking, we're doing a little bit better, we got some money, maybe we get married, maybe we don't, whatever the heck it is, we rest on our laurels. And we're doing the real program we want to do, and that is, we want to do the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, we're going to the meetings, but we're not going to get fanatical like that guy Russell. You know, the God shit is great, you know, and I'm going to go along and I'm going to hold hands. And I'm going to say the Lord's Prayer. Don't expect me to go to church. Don't expect me any of that stuff. You know, I'm still pissed off at religion. I'm spiritual. I'm not religious. I'm still putting that, but I'm not going to dive into the deep end of that freaking pool. You understand what I'm saying? Because those people are crazy, you know, and I don't want people telling me what to do. And so we rest on our laurels. We do like half measures. We go halfway. We don't get well done in this deal. And what we find out is down the road at 15 to 20 years is that half measures avail us nothing. You know? And that there's a reason why they got people down on their knees the first 4 years. And there's a reason why. And you ever hear anybody say, well, if they did that when I came in, I wouldn't be here. You ever hear anybody say that shit? Well, it's true. You wouldn't have been here. The first 4 years, you wouldn't have been here. The first 4 years, they say, get down your knees and do this, like Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson did, and they do it all the time, did it by your hospital bed, you wouldn't be in an AA meeting. You'd be out drinking or dying or whatever it is, you'd be there. So let me ask you something. How many people do you think would be an AA here today if, in order to get in, you had to get down on your knees and give your life to God in front of other people? How many people do you think would be in AA today? What percentage would be in AA today at meetings if, in order to go to a meeting, you had to get down on your knees and give your life to God like they did the first 4 years when they said thoroughly?
How many? I would
have done it.
I did it.
I didn't say you wouldn't have done it, okay? And a lot of people were so desperate. I'm saying, what percentage of people would actually be here?
30.
Okay. Well, listen, who knows? But who knows? But here's the deal. Here's what I think. This is what I think. My personal feeling is, based upon what I've seen, 98% wouldn't be here, 2% would be here. 2%, 2 out of 10. The others would say, thanks, but no thanks. I didn't sign up for this shit.
2 out of 100.
2 out of 100?
2 out of 100.
Whatever. I'm 70 years old. Give me a break. 2 out of 100, you know, maybe. So I don't know. So you have, so instead of a meeting of, what do you have, 50 people in here, whatever we have in here, you know, you'd have like 5, you know. But what do you think the meetings would be like? What do you think the meetings would be like? Do you think they'd be a little bit different than the meetings we have now? You probably have less group therapy, right?
A little more somber.
You know, you wouldn't be pretty serious as a heart attack, you know? Mm-hmm. Wouldn't have people joking about the Catholic Church or shit like that, or making snide remarks about religion, or saying I'm spiritual and not religious. You wouldn't have that stuff. You'd probably have a Bible on that. You'd have be a different deal. Now, I'm not looking to turn AA back to where it was. And I happen to believe that that AA still exists. I believe it still exists. I believe there's really two fellowships in Alcoholics Anonymous that I've seen. There's the fellowship that we all come in on, the not drinking club, where, you know, not drinking is the most important thing. It's the only thing that's important, that all this other stuff is bullshit, and it's just not drinking. Don't drink even if your ass falls off. We hand out chips for not drinking. You know, we got anniversaries, not drinking, dry. And then there's another deal. There's a completely separate deal, which has to do with something called the Fellowship of the Spirit, which is actually mentioned in the Bible. It's called the Fellowship of the Spirit. And I think that comes along somewhere around the sixth step, where you don't make a decision to turn your will and your life over to God like you do in the third step, but you actually turn your will and your life over to the care of God. You actually start, in other words, in your walk, you know, my sponsor used to say you could talk the talk, but can you walk the walk? In your walk, you actually do stuff that most people won't do. And so somewhere about 9, and like it happens in most things, in what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, and when you talk about the sixth and seventh step, and they talk about how we change our perception, is we change our perception about the God things and all this other things and what we're going to do and how we're going to surrender, much the same way as we came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Remember how you came to Alcoholics? Well, the way they say in the seventh step is they say it like this. They say, the way we get a new perspective is by repeated humiliations and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. In other words, it would be nice to say that alcoholics figure this thing out because they're smart. But that's not true. The smarter your sponsee is, the more he's going to tell you to go screw yourself. Or say things like you don't understand because he's smarter than you are. No, smart doesn't do it, okay? What gets us in here, you do remember how you came in here. What gets us in here is pain. And in fact, I mean, I'm telling you, it's the truth. I mean, I'm sorry, but the bottom line is, in fact, it's like they say, Jack Nicholson said, the truth, you can't handle the truth. In fact, not only does the pain get you in here, but in the seventh step, it says we learn the value of suffering. How's that for fun and games, you know? You want to be right. Hey, listen, don't worry. You stick around here for 20 years, you're going to learn the value of suffering. And what you're going to learn, and what you do learn if you've been around here 10, 20, 30 years, looking back on things, is that you've been through a whole lot of shit. You've been a whole lot of money problems and cancer problems and health problems and problems you caused and problems you didn't cause and crap that didn't happen. And even though you went to meetings, and even though you had a sponsor, and even though you read the book, and all that sort of helped you, the real change didn't really start coming. The real turning around the battleship didn't start coming until you start getting the pound, you get getting the crap pounding, until you start getting crushed and crushed and crushed by your mistakes over and over again, where you got sick and in other words, the real change in attitude about God and about everything didn't start happening until you got serious, and you got serious about the time when you got to the end of a long line of, I can't take this shit anymore. In other words, the process that got you in here in the first place, where you thought your life was over and it was never going to be better again, and you became entirely, here's what happened. Out of a lot of suffering, you became entirely ready to stop drinking. You became ready. Now, a week before that, if somebody talked about you drinking, you say, why don't you go screw yourself, you know? A month before that, someone stopped drinking, says, you don't understand. But at some point in time in your life, you became entirely ready to stop drinking. And it was probably about the time when you started feeling powerless over alcohol and that your life became unmanageable. Now, you remember that time? It probably wasn't like a real pleasant time. But if it wasn't for that time, you would have kept on going. You hit a bottom. Well, it may be true that there's other bottoms to be hit in Alcoholics Anonymous. Bottoms about sex, bottoms about romance, bottoms about money. There may be all sorts of bottoms about greed, bottoms about resentment. There may be all sorts of bottoms to be hit before you become. And so the real opportunity for the Holy Spirit to come into you, the Spirit of God to come into you and to change you and to remove the blockage of the sunshine of the Spirit to come into you, may not really happen when you're riding the crest and doing well in Alcoholics Anonymous. It may happen at 3 o'clock in the morning when you think your life is over and it's never going to get better again. I don't know whether I told this story. I knew a man. I'm not going to say his name or something. It doesn't really matter, but it is a point to this story. And I sort of got off track in one sense. I was going to talk about the stories. You know, in the Bible, when I started reading the Bible, they asked Jesus one time, why does he always talk in parables? Why does he always talk in stories? And his line was something like this. He says, because they won't understand unless I tell a story. They just, because for some reason about us, unless I tell a story, they're not going to get it. The secret is in the stories. And you know, I came in here without any stories. I had no story about myself. My stories all sound like, I'm not at fault. It's not my fault. I'm not to blame. He did it. It's his fault. He's to blame. You know, if this didn't happen, I wouldn't. I had no story. And over a period of time, a month, a year, 6 years, 10 years, and whatever it is, you develop different stories about yourself. You remember stories about yourself when you were before you started drinking, during your drinking, after your drinking. Every day is another story. Every day is another story. Because you start looking at things differently through and the reason, and here's the interesting thing about the stories, you know, this sort of like, it's not an apology, but why I don't talk so much about the details of the steps, which you can look about in the book, because I believe, I've been doing this for almost 39 years now. I'm a product of working this program, going through all the vagaries of life and all the problems of life, and working this program, doing the best I can for 30 years. So whatever AA, and all I've been doing is going to a shitload of meetings, sponsoring people and doing things we're supposed to do, not perfectly, but I'm at least an illustration of one person. You know what it says in the big book? It says we now are at a different basis, the basis of trusting, relying upon God. And then it says we never argue with people but God. We let him demonstrate in our lives what it's all about. So the one thing I can tell you, for good or for bad, that whatever you think about me or whoever I am, trust me, I am the one thing I've done consistently since I was 31 years old is Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a couple of things I've done consistently. Number one, I haven't drank one day at a time, no matter what. Number two, I have consistently gone to meetings, had a sponsor, worked the steps, and done this stuff and started consistently for almost 39 years now. And number three, I've dealt with every kind of crap and bullshit that you could possibly imagine in life that all you have dealt with for 39 years. And incredibly failed and suffered and worried and stayed up at 3 o'clock in the morning. You name the problem, except being pregnant. You know what I mean? I probably could identify with it. You with me? I could probably. And I've done all that consistently. So let me explain something to you. I am, whatever you think, I am the product. I am a product of Alcoholics Anonymous. If somebody says, well, what will AA do for you or with you? What will happen if you do this AA thing? You say, that will point at me or you'll point at you. You know, we're the product of this. And I happen to be satisfied with the product. Not so satisfied where I don't think I have ways to go. I'm a satisfied customer. And so that being the case, and I've developed a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Not that I'm totally rigorously on it or I'm perfect. You know, we're not saints. But the point is, as I go along and slowly through time, like the Grand Canyon is built, through pain and suffering and bullshit, God has all of a sudden, first it was the drinking, then it was the resentments, then it was the anger, then it was the worry, then it was the, you know, blaming. That through a slow period of time where I've gotten out of the old alcoholic thinking, which, by the way, you know, the old alcoholic thinking, they don't know who they're screwing with. I'll show them. This is a bunch of bull. You know, out of the old alcoholic thinking into the new thinking, which is a manner of thinking and living and hanging out with people and being with certain situations. And I've developed a new manner of living, which demands rigorous honesty. So what I put to you is this, is that if I tell you a story about my life, if I just tell you any story I tell you that's the truth about my life, I promise you, if any alcoholic tells you a story about your life, embedded in that story is every step 1 through 12. It can't possibly not be there. Because the whole point about Alcoholics Anonymous is to have you live a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty, which will include a manner of living where the way you operate and how you are and what you say includes and subsumes all the steps and all the truth of whatever's in those steps. Now, I may tell a story and somebody here might see the third step, and somebody else might see the 10th step, and somebody else might see the 7th or the 6th step, and somebody else might see the 12th step. You may say different things or different things we talk about in here, but they're all within that story, and what you see really depends upon where you're at and what you notice. And it takes years sometimes to connect the dots and see what these things are really, you know, all about, these story things. So I there's this great story I heard many years ago. I said in a Bible school, because I started, what happened was I got to a point around 9 years or 10 years where I'd been doing AA, you know, the way you did AA, but I wasn't happy with my sobriety. Do you think it's possible to be sober and not happy?
Oh, yeah.
Let me tell you something. There's a line in the big book, Envision for You. It says, every once in a while, now and here again, a big drinker, a problem drinker, says, feel better, look better, having a better time. And he says, and this is what it says, we laugh at that deal. I used to wonder, that used to puzzle me. I mean, the first few months, guy says, I feel better, look better, having a better time. How could you laugh at that? And he says, we know he'll try the old game because he's not happy with his sobriety. I could never understand how they could say that until I started meeting people and sponsoring people who told me, I'm doing great, don't worry about me, I'm never going to drink again. And so until I started meeting people and sponsoring people who talked like that, instead of people who were talking about how much problems they were having, how difficult things were, how they were trying to get through, I would meet people that would say, hey, I'm doing great, don't even worry about me, I'm never going to drink again, I got this thing. Then I started seeing that everybody who came up to me, who I sponsored, who have that sort of mindset. I'm well, everything's okay, get off my back, I'm not even thinking about drinking, I ain't never gonna drink again. Every one of them drank again. Now intellectually, you would think that those are the people, the ones that say, I ain't never gonna drink again, you would think those are the people that are never gonna drink again. And the guys that are saying, my life is crap, I don't know what's going on, I'm feeling bad, you know, everything like that, I'm going to meet, I'm trying to figure out what's, you know, trying to work. You'd think that they're the ones that are going to slide, but the ones that do well are the ones that are doing lousy, and the ones that do lousy are the ones that are doing well. I don't know how to explain it, but it has to do with the value of suffering and surrender and being willing. And it also has to do with the idea of being powerless, power without power. A person who really believes he's without power to drink or not drink will never say I ain't never gonna. I'll never say I ain't never gonna drink again. I'd be scared to say I'm never gonna drink again. First of all, how would I know that? How could I even state that if I'm powerless over alcohol? If I believe there's only one who has all power and that one is God, may you find me. I mean, I don't feel like drinking today. I haven't had a drink. Felt like drinking a long time. I pray to God I won't drink. But I know that if I stop doing a lot of this stuff, or even just a little of this stuff, my life is up for grabs. I can turn into the first manner of living, which demands rigorous dishonesty, in a heartbeat. I've had it happen to me. I've had moments where all of a sudden I act, how do we say it, alcoholically. I've had moments even while I'm doing this stuff where, you know, like the sun is in the right position, my wife talks to me a certain way, you know, I'm worried about something, three or four things come at me at the same time, and I shout or I yell or I act like a baby or act like a child. I mean, it doesn't happen that often, you know what I mean? But I know I have the seeds of crappiness in me, you know? I know that the disease lives in me, you know what I mean? I can't take any chances. I got to do a lot of shit just to be almost okay. I mean, I got a bad. I've got the mind of a chronic alcoholic, like Carl Jung said. That I've never been able to cure a mind like that. He says, "Is there no change?" And he, yeah, and he said, "Yeah, total psychic change in your personality, brought about by God, by the Spirit." It says, "Ideas, emotions, attitudes that are the guiding force of these men's lives are cast to one side, become dominated by a whole new set of ideas, emotions, attitude, brought on by God. God changes." What does it say in the big book? I mean, this is what it says in the big book. It says, in the promise, it says, he is doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. It doesn't say it's happening to us because of something we did for ourselves. It doesn't say because it says he is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. You know, that's it's all about the God thing. So the bottom line is, so we have this, so inside, embedded in the stories. So that's what I try to, whenever I talk, whenever I say anything, as much as I'm so alcoholic and it's just a matter of, and there's nothing necessarily wrong with this, but, you know, every once in a while I'll express an opinion, which I hope is based upon my experience, you know. I hope it's based upon my experience. You know, I mean, experience is important. I mean, I know a lot of people say, well, time isn't important. Yeah, it's usually people with no time, but I mean, you know, listen, time is important because this crap, this change happens over time. That's why in the sixth step, which separates the men from the boys, it says, The men are trying to grow in the image and likeness. They're not just not trying not to drink. They're trying to grow in the image and likeness of their creator. They try these things repeatedly over a lifetime. It takes a lifetime to repeat these things. This isn't like drinking scotch. This isn't like having a bad day and you walk in the bar and go whack, whack, and all of a sudden everything's wonderful. You know, and the girls are all looking at you and you're on top of the world again. This is like whack, whack over a period of 50 years. You know what I mean? This takes time. This is not like just getting in trouble and getting your ass chewed up and not being able to go to sleep and waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning worried about this and that and the money. This is about doing that over and over again for 20 years and praying to God, you know, and giving your life to God over a period of time, surrendering, you know. And that's why, you know, so there's a guy I know, I'll tell that story next week. Too long, but I had a man in my life a few years ago who I sort of sponsored and everything, and he owed a lot of money, and he had a lot of time, had over 20 years, and I was helping him out, and every once in a while he talked to me, and he owed a lot of money, several hundred thousand dollars to the government for various reasons. It just came upon him, you know how the government writes you a little certified letter saying, dear so-and-so, you owe us $200,000, you know. And you know, I don't know what kind of alcoholism you have. I know you're spiritual, not religious. I know money isn't important. It's just right up there with oxygen. You know what I mean? But you know, he got this letter, and I know you're gonna be surprised at this. It made him sort of nervous. Even when you got over 20 years, you know, it makes you kind of nervous when you get a letter from the government. You figure, I don't know about you, but when I've gotten letters like that, you owe this much or that much, I figure they've got an entire bureau of alcohol, tobacco, and firearms or something, or in the FBI, and they got 50 people and 6 FBI agents just devoted to me, you know? Oh, I'm so self-centered. But anyway, you know, so he was upset about it. He was concerned. He was nervous, you know what I mean? And now, you may be nervous about different other things, but whatever it is, but he was upset, and it was sort of like the kind of thing, you ever have something that bothers you, but it bothers you all the time? I mean, you can't, like, all the time. Like, even when you're watching TV, you're going to a meeting, and you're not thinking about it, as soon as you walk out the door of the meeting, you pick it up again, you know what I mean? You go to sleep thinking about it, you wake up thinking about it, you just can't, it's always there waiting for you. What's going to happen if they do this? What's going to happen to this? What are people going to think about me? And whatever the heck it is. And it was just killing them, and he had a father who was a multi-millionaire who could write a check like that. And dad would not write the check. Dad would not write the check. Now, I want you to imagine yourself in a position where you're worried about money. And you're really worried about money. You got a wife and you got kids and you got things and you really need money. And you have a father who's a multimillionaire and he won't write the check. And you got 20 years. So every time I'd speak to this guy and he had problems, you know what he'd talk about?
Money.
His dad. His dad. Problems with his dad. Problems with his relationship with his dad. Things that were bothering about his dad. Deep-seated shit. You know? You know, no matter what I said to him about resentments and about his dad, you know, it didn't even pierce the... And he was not stupid. And he was working on a program of recovery. And he knew about the steps. And he would say, you're right, you're right, you're right. Wouldn't even pierce the son of a bitch thing. You know what I mean? Wouldn't even do anything to it, you know? Imagine yourself in the position where your father, your mother, could just like that relieve the pressure in your life and they won't do it. Now I'm an orphan. I don't want you to feel sorry for me. I'm 70 years old. Of course I'm a freaking orphan. You know what I mean? My mother and father, my father died at 92 a couple of years ago. My mother died at 69 years. She had 19 years sobriety, and I'm an orphan. There's probably a bunch of people in this room that are orphans, you know? And I raised a wife and four children, and you know, I mean, and I raised a wife. I raised a wife from the dead, you know, from the damned, you know. No, my wife is beautiful, a wonderful person, you know, and four children. I got seven grandchildren. And when you are out there trying to earn a buck, and you are the breadwinner, and you are earning, and you got four kids, and you're out there, let me tell you something, unless you come from an incredibly wealthy family, you know what I mean? You know, you're going to have money, you're going to have more month than money sometimes. I've been foreclosures, I've been through all sorts of stuff that kept me up at 3 o'clock in the morning while being sober. I mean, I'll tell you, I've handled Alcoholics Anonymous in this program under live fire. I wasn't in some cave somewhere, a monastery somewhere, with people taking care of me. I've been under live fire with all sorts of things, judges, clients, you know, all sorts of stuff going on. You name it, I've been doing that deal, you know? And which is the only way to do it. Let me tell you something, under live fire, you know, we try, like the book of James said. You know, that's why they love the book of James. It says, rejoice when you have trials of many kinds. Because if you persevere with faith through the trials, your faith will grow. You'll grow, and that's the whole point. In the 11th step, we improve our conscious contact with God. And let me tell you how I improve my conscious contact with God. I'm an orphan. So when I was 3 months behind in my mortgage, and I was, and the money wasn't coming in, all the money wasn't coming in, I had no mommy or daddy to call up. I had nobody to call up. I mean, I could talk to a sponsor and I could talk to anybody in the world, but you want to know something? Ain't nobody giving me the money. I had to go out and earn the money or do something or change or whatever. But the bottom line is, I may have done that or known that or somehow got myself out of it. But the truth is, just because you ultimately get yourself out, it does not do anything about the fear. Now, if you haven't had fear at 3 o'clock in the morning, if you haven't woken up at 3 o'clock in the morning in fear, well, you and I suffer from a different disease. That's all I can say. I have a different type of disease. So if you've never suffered from sober fear, so let me tell you what the deal is. I have nobody to resent for not giving me money. I have nobody to resent for not fixing my life, you know? The only person I get mad at is me, really. That's the truth, you know, because I've always been one of these guys that's, you know, it's about being dishonest, that spend money he doesn't have to buy things he doesn't like, to impress people he doesn't like, and he doesn't like to. I've always been that guy who, it's like my sponsor said, he said, you spend more than you make, you go into something called debt. So it's about living a dishonest financial life, which I own up to, by the way, you know, which I'm a hell of a lot better at today, but still not perfect, okay? But you know how I learned that? By going broke a lot of times. You know how you learn that? By going broke a lot of times. We live in a marvelous country. They will allow you, over a period of time, it's amazing. They will give you credit cards and allow you to live like a millionaire, even when you're only making $1,000. It's amazing what this country will do for you, you know? And so I cannot be mad at anybody. I can't even be mad at the credit card companies. I can't even be mad at I can't. So the only thing I could do at 3 o'clock in the morning, while I'm doing this AA thing, when I couldn't get to sleep and I was worried what's gonna happen, I couldn't tell my wife. Because I couldn't fix me. I couldn't try to fix me by telling my wife about all my fears, because you know who she depends upon?
You.
Me. And you know what happens if she thinks I'm scared or I tell about this stuff? She freaks out. Which, quite frankly, makes my life worse. I cannot try to relieve myself by putting pressure on my wife. I just can't do that. That would be something like a selfish asshole would do, which, quite frankly, I'm quite capable of doing. Yeah. Trust me, the old me would be quite capable of doing that, you know what I mean? Without any regard for their feelings, just try to relieve, you know, but I can't do that. So the only thing I can do at 3 o'clock in the morning is turn to the God of my understanding and say, Lord, please help me. Please help me not to be an asshole. Please help me to be a good father. Please help me to, you know, have courage. Please help me to do the right thing. Please help me to face this thing right. Please help me to call up this person, that program. Please help me to do the right. That's the only thing I can do. And do you know what happens when you live a life on this planet, and whenever you're in fear, whenever stuff like that is happening, you turn to God and you say, please help me, please help me, please help me. Well, first of all, let me tell you something. It's never failed that he's always helped me. Mm-hmm. Not that all of a sudden $1,000 has appeared in my bank account or something like that, but it's never failed that I've been able to go to sleep. Mm-hmm. It's never failed that I've been able to somehow manage to get up in the morning, put 2 feet in front of myself, not drink, and actually act to good purpose. Never failed it. That doesn't happen. Do you know what happens when you do that over a period of 38, almost 39 years? What happens is you live a life where it's not about getting on your knees. You just never get off your knees. You're always talking to God and saying, help me, help me. It becomes like a, now you could say it's an imaginary thing. You could say it's like rabbits, but you could say whatever you want. But I can tell you this, it becomes an absolute central part of your life. You base your life on the fact that you have a father and he will always help you and he is always there and he has always come through for me. Life becomes a lot easier. And when you think about it and you start thinking about what happens and the changes that happen, it's very closely related to what they talk about happens in Alcoholics Anonymous. So the last page of the big book says the following. I don't know whether you know this, but in the last three paragraphs of the big book, they basically state what is actually supposed to happen to you if you actually do what happened in the preceding 163 pages, where you're supposed to be at. I don't know whether you've ever read the last three paragraphs. You would think when they end the book, they're going to try to end it with sort of like a summary of this is what's going to actually happen to you. This is what AA and the program is going to do for you. And if you haven't gotten that yet, you understand what I'm saying? You need to think about it. You might want to think about it. So let me read this to you. Still you may say, but I will not have the benefit of contact with you who write this book. We cannot be sure. God will determine that. So you must remember that your real reliance is always upon him. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. He's even going to show you who to hang out with, who to listen to, who to be involved with. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. You know just a little, but more is going to be revealed in time if you keep on doing this stuff. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Not the fourth step, not the sixth step, not the second step. This is the great fact. Your relationship with God. This is what this whole thing is about. Abandon yourself. There we go again with those crazy words. Words like thoroughly, utterly. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of the past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the, here it comes, in the fellowship of the Spirit. In the fellowship of the Spirit. And that's with a capital F. It's like a real deal, the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Dr. Bob says at the end of Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, Dr. Bob's nightmare. He says, if you're an atheist or an agnostic, have some sort of intellectual pride that keeps you from understanding what we're saying in this, we feel sorry for you. Your Heavenly Father will never let you down. Now, how do you read, how do you rationalize, how do you read those last three paragraphs and everything that went before and be an atheist and think you're doing the program of Alcoholics Anonymous? Or be an agnostic and think you're doing the program. Now, let me tell you something. If you're an alcoholic, it's absolutely possible. I mean, it is possible. You know, we allow people to sort of grow into this thing, and so it's like a spiritual kindergarten and everything like that. But one of the things I can't do is I can't be dishonest. I can't be dishonest, you know? Somewhere down the road, they may get something. You may get something out of this thing. You may stay sober until the day you die, you know? But it ain't going to be the same chocolate cake. I mean, if this disease has to do with having a recipe, if there's a recipe to getting to that deal, if there's a recipe, you understand what I'm saying? Whatever you get to by not surrendering to that deal, whatever cake you get, it ain't going to be the chocolate cake they're talking about in here. It's going to be something different. So when you're 20 years sober or 25 years sober and you're resenting your dad, or you're unhappy with your sobriety, like they say in the big book, he's not happy with his sobriety. Soon he will do the old game again. He will know loneliness is few. If you're 20 years old, 20 years sober, some of them stay sober and just stay miserable. Some of them drink again after 9 or 10 or 15 years because they stop working this thing. There are things they refuse to surrender. Please don't go out and say to people in Alcoholics Anonymous that you did the AA program and it didn't work. Tell them the truth. Tell them you came in here to AA, you did part of the program, you tried it out, it worked for a while, but there were things you just weren't going to do. You know what I mean? So the reason it didn't work is you never really surrendered. Just tell me you just didn't do it. You just wouldn't do it. You decided to work your program instead of the AA program. You know? So thank you very much. Yeah, thank you.